Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
What up, it's your boy Sloan Bone of the Mo Thugs Movement, part of the Bone Thugs and Harmony family tree, the 86ers brand ambassador. Check it out though, listen. In a world full of followers, be proud to be different. Be an 86er. So what I need y'all to do is go to the 86ers.net. We got the dopest apparel, men and women. Everything you need for a fresh start. I'm talking tees, zip-ups, tanks, hoodies, and the best hats at a price nobody can match. I'ma ask you this though. What do your clothes say about you? If you don't know, come to the 86ers.net and find yourself out. And a special shout out to Don McGuire, the host of The Fighter's Voice. Salute, big homie.
Welcome to The Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire. You know, tonight is a really special night for me. I love bringing this guest on because he's a part of my life. And he's been a tremendous part of my journey. You know, he's been with me through adversity and the heights in my career. And he's proof that in life, you don't always have to get along with people. You don't always have to agree with people. But you can always stay brothers. And that's true, so true with this tremendous young man. With that being said, I want to bring on my homie. The one and only Zach Cummings. What's happening, Zach?
You know, just another night enjoying this whole thing crazy called life.
Yeah, right? We're all just a bunch of actors in a movie and didn't even know it. You know, it's crazy. I just turned 56 years old. They don't even sound right, bro. And I've never walked this walk in my life before. I don't even understand the direction we're going. But, you know, we're here. We have to live with it. We have to deal with it. It's, I guess, part of the new normal, as they say, which I'll never accept. But you got a fight coming up in August. You know, I kind of like this matchup, bro, to be quite honest with you, because they got you against a young up-and-comer. What does this fight mean on that level for you, Zach? Because you're a veteran. You've been around a while. You've beaten some of the best in your weight class. What does it mean for you to get this opportunity against some fresh meat?
Man, I just, honestly, I love to compete. I really don't care who it is. So I think it's a pretty big step down for me in competition, like rank and name-wise, I guess. But, you know, I mean, if it's in the UFC, everybody's a tough fight. Everybody's got skill and everything. So it's not an easy fight, but I do think it's a different step of in competition, which, I mean, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing or whatever, but I just got to make sure that I show up on my game and own the opportunity that's kind of given to me.
Well, I feel you. I mean, you're sitting at 23-7, I think he's 12-4. But what I like about this matchup, and I got to be quite frank with you, you know, it's sometimes some of this new era aspect of the sport, they kind of need to be taken down a notch. You know, I'm old school. I think that way. You know, I think everybody has to earn their respect in the sport. You truly have earned your way. You know, yeah. Is it kind of a step backwards for you? You can look at it in that, you know, that aspect, but I don't look at it like that. I look at, because I'm, like we just stated, I'm 56, so every once in a while an old man's got to prove himself against a youngster coming up, right?
And in this sport, yeah, for sure. It's that's how it is. Yeah, definitely, I guess, the old vet, you know, towards the latter end of the career. And you know, he's still young, still coming up. You know, he's been able to hit some speed bumps and kind of keep on moving and everything. So, I mean, he's kind of, I think his back's against the wall, and he's going to probably come out the best Alessio that he could be and everything. But yeah, I mean, sometimes you gotta bust out the old dog, teach these little youngins a lesson, I guess.
Hey man, you ain't never been hit till you've been hit by an old man. You know, I'm not calling you old by any means, bro, but I learned that lesson when I was 18.
My body
was
so different.
Crap to this, yeah, I was talking crap to this 40-year-old man, and that man hit me, and I ain't never been hit like that in my life, bro. I was just like, my ears were ringing. Everything was ringing. I was like, I'm never talking crap to an old man again. But, oh, it was just crazy. You know, I kind of want to touch on the family side for a minute because we talked about her before the show. She's such a beautiful little girl. What was it like? I think this was your second Father's Day, correct?
It was.
Yeah, you know, what's it like watching her grow and then, you know, having these special days, you know, these special days like Father's Day and get to spend that time with her. What do these moments truly mean to you, Zach, away from the sport, as a man, as a husband, and as a father?
Well, you know, I got to do a lot of yard work on Father's Day, so that was special. it's been a whole other type of journey in my life. You know what I mean? Like, I've been in sports and competition my whole life. I mean, since I can remember, since I was a little kid, I've been in competitive sports and for a long time I've been in, you know, contact sports, with it being football, wrestling, now the MMA. Everything's just kind of hard nosed, get after it mentality and everything, and just I don't know, it's just now kind of moving over into fatherhood and raising a little girl and have my daughter. It's completely different. Like, it opened my eyes up and how different life can be and everything. And that's kind of been a really special thing, just to kind of watch that and kind of, I guess, get more of a softer side to my life and everything. Not that I'm like a crazy hard-nosed person, you know, I mean, even when I fight, I'm still pretty methodical, but it's still different. It's still a different thought process. So, I mean, just watching her grow up and you know, she's kind of whatever, almost working on 3 here in a few months, and just seeing the growth and the intelligence kind of build and the attitude and the personality and everything just kind of mold is been really kind of special, and it's been a fun thing to do. I know with this whole quarantine thing that happened, you know, I mean, a lot of people's been negatively affected and everything, but I was in the middle of a long fight camp. You know, I was supposed to fight in January. Opponent wouldn't take the fight and got bumped to a different opponent in April. So I was just in and out in Denver here, training, getting ready to fight. And then that happens, and, like, my life just slowed down, like, just halted, you know what I mean? Like, the gym got shut down, everything. So I'm being able to sit there and spend every second of every day with my daughter, you know, not having to worry about daycares or school or, anything, just being traveling, been out of town, like, just the whole time. And it was honestly probably one of the best things that happened to me, just to kind of slow life down and take that all in. And, man, I've just been continuing it, you know, even with fight camp and stuff, but it's been really, really nice to kind of get back connected to that and really enjoy it.
Yeah. You know, talking about the gym and the shutdown, Glory was scheduled to open their third gym in Kansas City. How much of a factor has that been on the whole Glory Association as a whole, bro? Because, you know, people don't understand, when you guys do your gyms, you put 100 into it. You give the athletes and fighters and the moms and pops that come for your fit classes and all this, you give them the best aspect of a gym. I mean, you don't skimp on anything. Your product is pure. Everything is top-notch in quality. How hard did it financially hurt the situation of Glory, and How has it been coming back?
I mean, it's definitely never easy whenever you have to shut the doors of a business and everything. I've got my location, and then basically have kind of different fighters that are all affiliated, like kind of run the different ones. So I can mainly speak on mine, but I know that, you know, the Lee Summit, you know, James's main gym is in the same boat and stuff. And like we've worked our asses off basically to make sure that we're smart and build an emergency fund, you know, like I think, you know, like any business should, you know, so in case something happens, they can go back and fall back on that. So we were fine, as in the fact that, you know, we did whatever we could, try to do some online content and do whatever we could to help our gym members to kind of keep them on board. You know, obviously some people are having issues with their jobs, had to freeze or cancel memberships, but it was part of it. But I mean, I think us being prepared for something to happen and build up a very comfortable emergency fund, you know, for the business really kind of saved us, since it really wasn't as long as we would not, you know, as we thought. Instead of actually having to use this emergency fund, we actually went ahead and dug into it and, you know, rematted out a big area of the gym. We kind of did a whole bunch of improvements. That way when we came out of there, our members knew that, like, we've been stayed busy. We invested in them, in the gym. And not, you know, not just kind of like sitting there scared. So we worked out. We were fine. I mean, we had, like I said, we planned for something bad. I mean, something bad's always going to happen in business and everything. If you don't plan for it, you just pay yourself out every bit of money you bring in. Like, something happens and, you know, you might shut the doors for good. So we were good with that. The other location, I think they were pretty much had the upfront investment ready to go to build the business out, to build the gym out. And it still pretty much opened up its doors almost on time. So, and then right when they were able to open, everything started opening back up. They did very, very well this first month being open. Maybe if this whole situation didn't happen, they might have a few more members, but they had a great opening and a lot of good classes and memberships that sold immediately. So I think they're doing great already first month, which, you know, a lot of gyms, it takes a long time to get as many members as they have. For the most part, things went well. I mean, I think now we have a good model for classes, for the gym, for the business side of the gym. And I think it kind of helped, you know, on that third location. But I mean, we're good. I mean, it's, you know, it's going to take a little bit to kind of build everything back up. But I mean, our members are great. They have we have an amazing culture built, and I think that helped more than anything, because it's like a family that, you know, just how everybody was stuck at home and everything. You know, they wanted to go see their grandparents. They wanted to go see their parents. Like, they just couldn't wait to get back to their family. A lot of our gym members was the same way. Like, they just couldn't get back to each other because we're just one big family, and that's the culture we built. And I think that was the game changer for us.
That defines glory. I mean, it really does. Even though, rest his peace, William Joplin, you know, he would always say that there's no family like the glory family. And, you know, that's true. I shot both gyms for quite a while, and I haven't in a long time, and I apologize to all the fighters for that, but I'll get back up there soon. You know, I kind of took a step away as the show continues to grow, and of course the virus hit. You know, I'm gonna pull a Barbara Walters moment on you for a minute, if you don't mind. No, because you know my show, you know how it goes. It's more about you than really the fight. I mean, we'll talk more on fighting in a moment, but the show is about getting to know the fighter. That's why it's called The Fighter's Voice. You know, a lot of people don't realize how long James Krause has really been in your life, but you go from the Springfield Fight Club. You had Michael Johnson. You had, God, Jesse Zwiggin. God, I can't remember all of them. What's his little, Jacob Ritchie? I mean,
Jacob Ritchie, Mike Glenn.
Yeah.
Casey Still.
And then what's Andrew Whitney.
Andrew Whitney.
Yeah, I mean,
the whole squad back in the day.
You're right, but you take it from there, and you think about what you learned, what you took in, and what made you knowledgeable about the sport, and then you grew, and then you became a tremendous black belt and professor yourself. But there's also several other people that have defined you in life. There's two that I want to speak on tonight. The first one being Chael Sonnen. What was it that Chael gave to Zach Cummings in knowledge?
Chael, it's kind of a two-part thing. So there's like the Ultimate Fighter experience as a whole, which Chael was my coach. So that whole experience was kind of tied into one, Chael being a huge part of it with his leadership and kind of inspirations there as the coach was one. So it was just kind of some reassurance that I deserve to kind of be with the best guys in the world. I was good enough to be there. I was good enough to compete with the best. I was one of the best. I deserve that life, basically. You know, I was working multiple jobs, you know, going to school, whatever, you know. I mean, it was there. I was training, I was fighting. But, you know, back then we had no idea how to, like, get to UFC. We had no idea. I was just in my little, you know, Springfield Fight Club gym, which we had some good guys, and we, you know, we got after it. But, you know, I was never at the Pat Miletich camp or the Greg Jackson's or Team Quest or like whatever these big gyms were that was back in the day. And, you know, you hear all these massive names and then you see them on TV, you know, and people hear these, you know, larger than life names and world rankings and you see them on TV and they, you know, look massive and whatever it is, you know. So having that experience to where I got to train next to and with and spar and go with some of the best guys in the world. And it just opens your eyes like, man, this is another person. Just another person that had a great opportunity that, you know, they're doing their thing. And like, I'm just as good. I'm right there with those guys and I deserve this in my life. So that was a big one, just kind of an eye opener there. And then, you know, Chael really kind of helped us out with some mentality stuff during competition, which really kind of stuck with me. And then whenever I got out of the UFC, or when I got out of the Ultimate Fighter, you know, I went and stayed out in Portland and Westland and trained with Chael, kind of helping him prepare for John Jones and my UFC debut at the time before I got hurt, was all doing that. So just seeing his work ethic and a true training camp and everything that was going on just really opened my eyes how, like, this is how top-level professionals do things, and this is how I need to do it. So that it was just massive. And then, like, yeah, I mean, you know, we still text each other, you know, whenever and kind of joke around and talk and ask questions to each other still. So he's still someone who's very well-connected and you know, someone who I still look up to today that is still in my life and that I can always reach out to if I need something. So it's, man, he's such a good human being. You know, I mean, he's a goofball on the mic and everything and kind of showed that it doesn't matter who you are and, like, what people think of you, like, deep down as a real person, like, you could be completely different. And it's, that was a big thing that I witnessed, of knowing how good of a person he was, even though he was this big villain, you know, outside. Or on the, as a character.
His persona. That's one thing that I love about the platform on my show, because a lot of people don't realize that. You know, they see him on TV and, oh my God, he's an ass, you know. And nah, some people are like Colby Covington, but not all of them. You know, it's a persona, you know.
Yeah.
You got to sell yourself to be in this business. Let's face it, it's not the easiest business in the world to be in. So you kind of were defined at that point in time. You kind of had a vision for Zach Cummings. But then a tremendous man in my eyes and in my heart came into your life. A tremendous man that has created many champions and is probably one of the most humble coaches that I've ever met, second to Colin Oyama, and that being Mark Montoya. What was the knowledge that, because you already came fight ready, fight smart, having knowledge of the game, what was it that Mark Montoya was able to put in Zach Cummings that was never there before?
Man, with the biggest one's accountability. It I don't want to let Mark down. You know, it's one of those where that general leader type person, you know, like and man, I'll be the first one to, like, James Krause is literally one of the best coaches I've ever seen in my life. For me, he's, you know, he's a teammate, he's a good friend, and I mean, I'll call him a coach of mine too. It's but like, we're almost, you know, we came up together and everything, so it's kind of hard. Like, he'll say stuff to me, and I trust his opinion and everything, but it's hard to, like, he says stuff, I'm like, oh, yeah, you're right, you know, and then, like, you know, whatever, and kind of roll it off. And, like, Mark says the same thing. I'm like, oh, shit, like, yeah, I got to fix this. I don't want to let him down, you know, and it's and Mark's the same thing for James. You know, it's one of those where James met him and really enjoyed his style and loved his leadership. And he leads from the front lines. It's insane what he does, what he puts himself through. And James came to me and said, hey, man, like, I really think you would enjoy this guy's coaching style, his leadership and everything. And, you know, so I went out to Denver with him, and God, he was so right. I was blown away by how good of a leader he was and how hard of a worker, and just like he had a lot of answers that I needed. And it was one of those. So, I mean, it was really like James kind of needed that leadership role. 'Cause I mean, we're both the coaches, you know, at our gyms. So having someone to look up to, having someone to hold you a little bit accountable that you didn't want to let down, like that head coach that you normally have in all these sports, you know, like, we're kind of that guy, so it's hard for us. So having him take that role in the reins for us really, really was huge. I mean, I know he turned James's career around, just his mindset and everything, and it was amazing to watch that. So I dove in and I'm, and you know, he will learn, you know, he's wide open. Like, he'll know what you're good at and he'll learn from you so he can keep, get better. But just bringing everything together and just kind of like leading from the front lines is what he's best at. And it's something that is, pretty tremendous to have in a coach.
Really? It truly is. And I've interviewed him several times, and God, just the coolest guy in the world. Here comes the Barbara Walters twist. You know, because you know there's always a method and madness to my questioning. You know, you got that from Chael. You and James truly gained a vast amount of knowledge from Mark Montoya. You go back to your schools, and you start creating champions and local and regional promotions, and then all of a sudden, like overnight, Glory had several fighters in the UFC. The Grasshoppers have now become the Masters and are continuing that legacy to become a UFC fighter, instilling the knowledge and faith and respect for the sport. So what does it mean for you on the flip side, now that you're the coach and you've instilled enough knowledge in your fighters that carried them to the greatest promotion in the sport?
I mean, I love coaching. I love being able to pass knowledge on to everybody else. And, you know, something that's a little bit different than our gym is, like, all the main coaches are still doing the thing, you know, they're still competing at the highest level. And it's kind of a new deal, because most of these old gyms and everything, like, it just, stuff wasn't really around for them to, to compete really yet. I mean, some did, but, you know, some just kind of like didn't really do, but they teach. And with ours, you know, we're able to still try to improve techniques still and improve game planning and apply it for ourselves at the highest level of the world. And then we're trying to pass this down to, you know, our amateurs, our young pros and everything. And again, honestly, I got to give a ton of credit to Krause, because he has really taken a leadership for the local Kansas City pro team in the mornings, where just, it, you know, people get from all different gyms come together and kind of train in that room, and he's running everything. And it, like I said, it's just, he's such a good coach and has such a good mind and creating series. You know, he's so good at not that he knows all these different moves that people don't know, but he's so good at putting different things together and series. And it's kind of where the sport's going. And I just feel like we're just kind of, both of us are trying to stay on the most cutting edge of the sport and the martial arts, and just trying to continue to improve, you know, while we're still in it. And, you know, our team is bought in on everything, and they just believe the process. They put their head down, they put the work in, and, you know, now we're starting to kind of see the rewards from that.
Yeah, you truly are, not just in the UFC, but in Bellator also. And it's tremendous. The family aspect is second to none. You know, your wife and her family are tremendous people. And I'm going to kind of make you embarrassed here for a moment. You know, you brought it up on the show before yourself, so it's on you, girl.
All right.
You kind of met her when you were young, and you kind of liked her, but things didn't go that way real quickly. But you ultimately ended up finding the most wonderful woman that you possibly could in your life. And you had an opportunity to conjoin two families. What's it like having somebody like Mark Rarick be a part of your life? Because he's been a huge change and a breath of fresh air in mine, and a true brother, a man that I never thought would come to my back or come to my family's rescue in a time that was truly needed. But he did, without asking, without letting me give him a thank you, just a simple prayer. So what has it meant for Zach Cummings to not only find the woman of his dreams, have a beautiful child, but get the acclamation of Mark Rarick involved in that?
You know, he's been, really, the whole family's been in my life. Like, I grew up across the street from him, so.
I know that.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those where, you know, he was always in my life, kind of, you know, her mom or dad were both very influential in my childhood, you know, because, my mom was always working extremely hard to support my household, and, you know, my dad with being disabled and everything from Vietnam and all that stuff. I mean, like, he was there, but, you know, sometimes he wasn't there. But,
yeah.
So, I mean, like, I could always go across the street and kind of get some structure and everything, and that was Amy's family and everything. So, you know, it's funny because now as we get older, like, you know, I definitely try to make some smart, intelligent decisions, but having Amy as my backbone and knowing that if she's on board, I know it's a good decision. She's very, very calculated and very realistic in things. And, you know, sometimes she lets me dream and sometimes she pulls me back and hey, let's focus on some different stuff here. So, she is definitely like the complete opposite of me, but makes me and has made my life much, much better, and I can't thank that enough. And then with Mark and Dad in there, I mean, I've learned a lot. You know, he's always kind of been that outdoorsman person, that very I've seen him, you know, do a bunch of selfless acts for others.
Yeah.
And that's been, you know, pretty amazing to watch and see and stuff. And it's just kind of, I don't know, like it. I've never really had a big family locally and stuff. It was, you know, real close friends and stuff. And we had, you know, most of our families kind of spread out or has passed. So knowing, like, you know, to kind of go back and go to her big family reunions and spend time with her family, it's kind of gave me the void in my life that the thing I didn't really have. So it's kind of, yeah, it's been nice and special to have something I didn't know if I would really ever have, but, you know, I got to marry into it and it works.
You're always so humble, bro. You know, I'll admit it. Hey, the greatest thing I ever found in my life, I was 15 years old, and here I am, 56, and I've been married to her for 35 years, and I wouldn't have it any other way. I mean, she's the biggest thorn in my side or in my rump, but every time I listen to her, I never go wrong. You know, Zach, you, I, Michael Johnson, and a couple others have always heard that you could never be anything from the 417. People from the 417 really don't get that far because it's a small niche community. What does it mean for you when you sit back and you look over your shoulder now and you realize that the humble beginnings that you came from and the path that you've created?
I'm extremely happy and fortunate to have things work out for me. You know, I mean, I put my head down and I worked so hard. You know, the epitome of hard work, and, you know, nothing given to me. Never started with anything. Started behind on everything, but you know, being able just to earn my keep, earn my place by hard work and just moving forward and continuing to take the next step and take advantage of that step. And it's kind of, that's all it is. I mean, I never really thought about it too much of, you know, I do realize that Springfield and that 417 area is it's a different type of place. It's a vacuum type of a place where you get caught up in a lifestyle in there, and it's hard to get out. It's hard to change. I mean, you know, everybody thinks about, like, you know, there's all these old country songs that they, you know, they try to get out of their old town or whatever, you know, they got to get out of town to make something of themselves. And you don't think of Springfield as that type of place. It's actually, me and my wife is actually talking about this right before you called. But, you know, because there's a lot of people I know that was in my life back in the day in that area that really haven't evolved and changed much. And, you know, if they're happy with that, there's nothing wrong with that. I wasn't the type of person that wanted to stay with where I started and who I was. And I wanted to make sure that I gave my family everything I didn't have. And I'm nowhere close to being there, but I'm on my way. You know, I'm working incredibly hard to try to keep that improvement going and try to keep reaching these next steps and next levels and everything in my life. And that's my whole goal. That was my whole goal in life, was just whenever I had a child, I wanted to make sure that you know, they could start with something and not have to completely build up from ground zero or the basement. So, that was been one of my steps this whole time. And I'm nowhere close to satisfied. But yeah, I mean, I got out and I'm really happy to try to, like, prove that, you know, you can put your head down, put the work in. Doesn't matter, you know, all the other, I mean, really, just lack of a better term, with all the other bullshit that's out there in the world, like, you can go, you can earn and build yourself and do what you want to do, whatever that is. I mean, you have to have a plan, you have to have a work ethic, but it doesn't matter where you start. You know, you can build on that. It's kind of on you at that point.
I know. I feel you. There's two really interesting moments in my life, because I was in the sport before I met you, but a lot of people really don't know that side. We've talked about it on the show a couple times, and I'm not really going to dig too deep into it because you and already know the story. But you saw something in me, even at death's door. And you know I was literally at death's door.
Yeah, okay.
And you saw something in me, and you asked me to shoot your fight for Fight Night Returns. And I said, yeah, you know, I would. And it was a very crucial, really bad time in my life. I took that opportunity, just for my listeners, a real quick synopsis. I took that opportunity, and little did I know that after I told Zach yes, 2 days later I was going to have my gallbladder, my appendix, 10 feet of my spleen, intestine, part of my spleen, and a bunch of stuff removed out of me. Make a long story short, I had, I think it was 357 staples in my abdomen. And I show up at weigh-ins, and I'm just sweating profusely. And this is 3 days after surgery, after I forced the doctor to let me out of the hospital. I told me, either you unplug me or I'm going to unplug myself. But either way, I'm going to this fight. And he said, okay, you get me some tickets to the event, and against my better judgment, I'll let you shoot it. What was it in the mind of Zach Cummings that felt in your heart that it was relevant to ask me to come back and shoot your fight, knowing that I'd been in the sport and I'd been away for a while? What was it inside of you that asked me to come shoot your fight?
Easy answer, passion. You know, you came in, you know, where I worked, and you could see this, you know, you withering away, honestly. I mean, like, you could see that things were going downhill, and things were not really looking up for you. But the one, you know, any time that we saw each other and kind of spoke about the fighting, just, you know, is it me or local or just whatever, you could see that extra burst of energy that you would get and everything. So I think it was just, you know, not really knowing what was next for you and knowing how passionate you were. It was like, hey, like, you know, you should do this. You know, I had no clue of what you're going for or through, or else I would have never said that. But obviously I'm happy it worked out the way it did. But I thought you were insane whenever I saw you on Fight Night. But, yeah, that was just it. Like, just, you know, whenever you can be in whatever mindset, and then whenever you start, when you find that one thing and you're just so passionate about, and you get this burst of energy and whatever it is, and, like, I recognize that, I think. And it just, I thought it'd be a great thing for you to do, just to kind of, like, lift your hopes and your spirits. And it was, you know, especially after hearing, you know, the surgeries and all the stuff, what you went through, and still is just a trooper going through and did the whole night. It blew my mind, and it really just kind of, I'm very, very adamant about, like, I don't deal and want to surround myself around victim personalities and negative people. I just kind of refuse to do it. If you're that way, I just kind of cut you out of my life immediately. It's just not worth it. And so kind of having things were going really bad, but, like, you always tried to, there was always a positive and there was always, like, a fight. And then, you know, you would always kind of relate it to, like, you know, the passion of fighting and stuff. And I kind of recognized that. And it just, it was inspirational, I guess, to me and seeing it. And I respected it a ton. So it's kind of, I guess, where the question and then the kind of shout out the fight kind of came from, just because, I mean, I've stepped in and fought somebody, but seeing someone who's, like, fighting for their lives and, you know, stepped up and did something that they're very passionate about and did it as much as they possibly could and did a great job and everything, just that kind of blew me away more than me stepping in and, you know, fighting another person.
I appreciate that, man. That that gave me my life back, bro. You know, and that's what I want people to understand in life, and that's the reason I brought the story up, is it gave me a reason to live again. Like Zach talked about, you could see the passion. You know, I lost my leg, part of my foot, multiple death sentence, cancer 3-4 times, but I never gave up because this is what I always wanted to do. This is who I am. And you know, it's funny. It was another one of your teammates that really made me realize that I had made it. And I asked her to come on my show one night. And she's a tremendous professional figure now. She's a spokesperson for the UFC, and she's a tremendous friend and young lady in the sport, that being Laura Sanko. I asked her to come on the show, and she said, "Why wouldn't I? You've had everybody and their brother on." And it made my heart smile because, you know, it's hard to get recognition in this sport. It's hard to set yourself away from other shows. Hell, let's face it, there's 100,000 shows, and I had to find a way to share your story and gain the respect of the fighters and have them come on time and time again. And I found that just keeping it real, the fighters enjoy that, because most of your interviews are, let's be honest, are two-hour media scrums. You get interviewed by 30 guys in 2 hours, and 10 out of 10 times you're going to get asked the same questions. And I wanted to make a difference on my show. You know, I wanted to create an aspect for you to show the world who you are away from TV, away from the internet, to give them a look into the fighter. And, you know, hence the Fighter's Voice was born. You got a tremendous opportunity coming up, you know, and I know you don't take the sport lightly. I know you've gone in there with, in the beginning of the fight, and broken your orbital and couldn't even see the guy in front of you, but you still continued. You persevere time and time again. What can the fans truly expect August 29th out of Zach Cummings, a man coming out of quarantine, a man coming out of two failed opportunities, not by your own fault, but by the system? What can the fans expect come August 29th?
Man, not hungry is the easy answer. I'm a very big competitor. You know, I'm not a fighter. I'm a competitor, and I love competing. I love winning, and I still kind of have a sick feeling. You know, my last performance is just falling short, knowing it's a very winnable fight. I don't really like to make excuses. There's a lot of environmental stuff going on, and it was a very different place to fight it out in Abu Dhabi and everything, and it was just very different, and it affected my mindset. You know, I don't know about everything else, but it definitely affected me, and it was it just kind of sucks. So I hate losing, you know, and I dropped a close decision that, you know, I should have finished the guy in the first round, dropped him, and should have finished him, and I didn't. So, I mean, there's no excuse on anything else. But anytime I, you know, I mean, obviously, you always want to get in there and do your best. But, like, you know, anytime I lose, like, I feel like I have really something to improve my next outing. And typically, I go out with a big finish after I take a loss. So I have that same burning desire, that same itch that's been, you know, eating at me since my last competition. And I've just been in the gym and improving and learning and trying to add more skills to my game. And it's just, end of August, I'm going to step up and show those skills and hopefully, you know, finish a fight in a fantastic fashion like I try to do and normally do in most of my fights.
Well, you always do, man. You know, I'm not a fan of many, but of course I'm partial to you, but a lot of people know I have my favorite fighters. There's no lie. You know, I might be a journalist and I'm supposed to be biased, but I'm sorry, not when it comes to Zach Cummings. you know, it's a family affair. And I'm like your mom. I'm watching you fight with my hands over my face, with peeking between my fingers. And you surely impressed the hell out of me. The growth that you've shown since the Springfield Fight Club has been tremendous. You know, I know you love what you do because you can see it in your walk and your students and the people that you train, just in life in general. You're a rarity, homie. But before I let you go, I kind of want to ask you a question, because we never do this, you know. Since when you got put on quarantine and the gyms were shut down, because I know you like to walk around a little heavy and you got to make that massive cut. Did you cheat a little? And if you did, what was the first thing Zach Cummins went to?
I didn't really cheat a ton. I mean, I ate. I don't know. Like, so I've got shout out Guaranteed Foods. I have this company that basically fills a freezer of food for 6 months of food for me. You know, it's so like every 6 months we kind of re-up it. And have that. So, you know, a lot of it's cooked, some of it's cooked, some of it's raw or whatever, but I have a bunch of, you know, really lean steak, chicken, all kinds of stuff. So, I mean, like, really, like, we just kind of kept eating that food because we already have it. And so I really wasn't eating out at all since, because that's normally my cheats. You know, if I go out, I might eat more of a quantity or whatever it is, or, you know, go eat something else. It's probably not the best thing. So I mean, I was still eating pretty clean, for the most part, just because that's all I kind of kept in the house. I don't really keep a bunch of junk food in the house and stuff. But, mama bought me a little like outdoor griddle. So we had some fun little straight hibachi style nights where, you know, I had the fried rice and the noodles and the chicken, shrimp, steak, and veggies. And, man, I got that, had some of my friends over and did a whole little, like, straight-up hibachi show for just had a good time. Like, I've done that a couple of times. And that, I mean, that's probably the biggest cheat, just because it's a lot of food and, you know, more carbs into my normal diet. But, yeah, I mean, you know, for the most part, that was probably the biggest one. But, yeah, I mean, maybe I had a few more drinks, a few more cocktails than I normally do, just because we're in town. So I was stuck at home and hanging out. So I had, you know, a couple cocktails at night, maybe a little more weekly than I typically do. But that's about it.
Yeah. You know, you'd be surprised if you see me right now, homie. I'm sitting at 183.
Thick.
I got to lose weight to fight you.
No. Your boy's back up to 85. We good.
Oh, yeah. We go right at it then. Yeah. Oh, I remember the days that I was walking around 98 pounds, bro. It was just like, to see where I'm at now, they said I would never gain this much weight. But I have. I have two more questions, man, if you don't mind, before I let you go.
Shoot.
One of your young grasshoppers that come out of Springfield Fight Club that just got one of the biggest opportunities, one of the biggest breaks in her career, only to have it crushed. You know, how much did it mean for you to see Miranda Maverick get an opportunity in the UFC? And how devastating was it for you as being part of Springfield Fight Club and the Zach Cummins striking systems to see that moment taken away?
It was great to see her getting the opportunity. I mean, she's done some really good things in Invicta, you know, just kind of coming up the ranks and, you know, won a tournament. And, you know, she's coming off a big win off of Pearl. And, you know, she's doing well, obviously still, like, going through school and, you know, some high-level stuff there. So seeing her get the opportunity was really nice. Again, you know, kind of how we talked about earlier, it's like that. This little gym in Springfield, Missouri, and all of a sudden, you know, now it's produced, you know, its third UFC fighter, which is kind of great. I mean, I know, like, you know, Michael's been been down in Florida, which I think he just kind of went back to – or moved back to St. Louis, I believe. And then, yeah, you know, and she's off at school, but she still lives and goes back and stuff on breaks. So it was just really kind of cool of, like, knowing that my, you know, my little baby gym that we started at is still producing top level fighters, you know, even though she's with another team now, like at school. But anyway, you know, I was gutted. I felt bad for her that it didn't work out. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, like, she was taking a short notice fight to get signed with the UFC, and then it fell through. But I mean, typically they're going to give her another shot. So I don't think, like, they're cutting her. I think she'll get another opportunity. You know, probably it could even be a blessing in disguise. You know, she might get, like, a full-blown camp. You know, everything, you know, she knows what she's going to do, and have a real opportunity to make her UFC debut would be my guess. So it's terrible, and I know, like, you know, she's gutted for it right now, and I know it's probably very, very hard to deal with, you know, thinking you're so close and gets pulled away. But normally when you're on that short list and the call, and even if they call and officially sign you, if it doesn't work out, then it's I still think it's going to be a bright future for her. So I'm not too worried about it. I feel bad for the situation, but I think nothing but good things are going to come out of it.
Oh yeah, it was a medical clearance issue. She'll get that taken care of. And man, you know, I've been a strong advocate of hers for so many years and for so long, because I've always believed in her. Us in the sport, we have that eye. You know, I got one more question, because some are saying this should be fight of the year. I don't think it's fight of the year. I think it's in the top five, but I don't think it's the fight of the year thus far. But, you know, I could be wrong. You know, we're all entitled to our opinion. I want to get your thoughts on the Booker Poirier fight this last weekend.
Man, I think it's for sure a fight of the year candidate. I mean, is it fight of the year? I mean, I don't know. You kind of have to look back at, you know, it's easy to forget about things. I mean, you have, man, you won his last fight with Zhang Weili.
Yeah, JJ.
My God, that was amazing fight as well. So, I mean, like, maybe it's like top male fight, top female fight. I mean, then there's just, I feel like this year has been some ridiculous fights going on. I don't know if, like, the whole quarantine thing, or, like, just not having fans, or, you know, or whether, like, the whole setting's a little more intimate. But, man, I really feel like it's just creating these ridiculous fights. Like, everybody's just not wanting to turn back. You have these smaller cages, and I don't know what the recipe is, but I just feel like it's just putting them out. So I don't know. It's up there. It's one of the best fights I've seen in a long time. Action packed, nonstop. And the pace was crazy. It had everything. They both just took some hard shots, and the amount of strikes was there. It had everything. It was good. It was, I was so happy to be a fan that night. There was a few good fights, and there's been, I feel like, almost every card there's almost been a fight of the year contender. So it's hard to say fight of the year, but it's definitely up there in my book for sure.
Yeah, I loved it, bro. I'll be quite honest with you. I had it even going into the fifth round, and neither fighter backed down. I mean, they just both kept coming forward. They just, neither one of them wanted to give. And I have to, you know, say a lot of the fighters that I've had on my show, because I kept the show going through this quarantine stuff, as Dean Laster and a lot of aspects of Bellator kind of pushed on me to do so. Stitch pushed on me to do so. And I'm glad I did, because what I got from the fighters were they like the crowd not being there. They said it's more relaxed. It's more like a sparring session at the gym. You get to feel more like yourself, so you're more comfortable. And I think that's the element that's allowing some of these fights to be some of the greatest moments in fighting history, is the fighters are more relaxed. They don't have to worry about the crowd or any any distraction. It's just one-on-one. And like you said, the smaller cages bring more action. But Poirier, I tell you what, that man pulled a rabbit out of his hat in the fifth round that won in that fight. And, you know, kudos to him. Another fight that night that really, really, I don't know, because I shot this young lady's whole career, Kay Hansen. And to see her be an underdog so many times in Invicta and not get the opportunities that she deserved and get to go against the atomweight champion and Jin Yu Frey and come out with an armbar and show the sport, hey, I told you I was good. What do those moments mean to a fighter when the sport really doesn't give them the credit they do and they go out there and they shock the world? Because I know you've had moments like that. What does it feel like for a fighter to kind of look back at the sport and say, I told you so?
Validation. You know, it's it's weird because, like, fighting is always these betting odds and everything. I mean, just like most sport, you know, in every sport. But, you know, they come up with these betting odds and, like, then you're told that, you know, oh, you're the favorite, or oh, like, so, oh, I should win this fight, or like, oh, I'm a massive underdog. Like, you know, you're, as a fighter, like, your mindset's that you can beat anybody on any given night. You know, like, no one's too far ahead of you. You know what I mean? Like, I wholeheartedly believe that I can beat any world champion, like, on the right night. That's just how it is. I've drilled with multiple. I mean, I've worked out, I've sparred, I've, you know, fights are different, you know, obviously, than just training. But, like, I've trained with some of the best guys in the world, and I've had my moments. So, like, I know, I feel like I said earlier, with these big name people, like, they're just humans, they're just people. It's just another person. But, so whenever you feel like you can do that, you know, if everything kind of works out and stuff, and then you have these people that are like, oh, you're, you know, whatever, 7-1 underdog, or like, you know, like, when you hear this stuff, it's almost laughable. I remember having a fight where, yeah, I was like an 8-1 underdog, and I was like laughing because I had no idea until the guy was walking out and I looked up and I saw the odds, and I was like, you were shitting me. Like, what is going on? You know, like, this is how people feel about me, you know? So, like, and then you go out and I, you know, win a dominating performance, and I'm like, yeah, I mean, like, I knew what was going to happen. I felt good about this. And so then you kind of, like, validate, like, yeah, guys, like, I'm here, this is me, like, you know, don't count me out. And she definitely, she proved that, you know, I think she was a favorite, a small favorite. It was definitely a tough fight for her. And then, you know, she had everything she could handle and the whole fight until she got the submission. But, you know, strong mindset and just kept in the fight, in the fight, in the fight. And then she found her opportunity and seized it. So that's and then, yeah, absolutely, afterwards the fact, now she's like, hey, guys, like, I belong here. You know, this is me. I belong here. I told you this in day one. Like, I know what I'm capable of. And now you guys are starting to see that. That's kind of a big part of it.
You got to love that fighter vindication. And one aspect that I truly love, too, is that some person remained anonymous, but they bet $50,000 on Kay Hansen to win. And I think they walked away with a $37,000 profit. And
no, I think it was different. I think it was 30. They bet 37 to win 20, something like that.
Well, they bet 50
but
grand.
Yeah,
yeah, they won a shit ton of money. The bottom line is they won a ton of money. But you know what? To put that much faith and respect in a fighter is what's tremendous about the fans. You know, I love the fans. I love what they bring to the sport. I love the inner workings. And to be able to interview fighters like you and, you know, have you share who you are with my listeners in the world and help get your name out there. You know, you guys are doing just as much for me as I am for you. You know, with that being said, Zach, I truly appreciate each and every time you come on my show. I know when you come out August 29th against Alessio Tesserico, I guess that's how you say his name, I know you're going to show the world how hungry you are. You know, hey, that may be the fight of the year right there. We'll just have to wait and see. People, mark your books. You don't want to miss August 29th. Zach Cummings versus Alessio. It's going to be a night to remember. With that being said, Zach, I'm always honored that you come on the show, brother. I'm going to pass the mic to you. If you have any friends and family, social media sites, or sponsors, the floor is yours, my brother. But don't forget to plug that meat company that keeps you hooked up, too.
Give me a follow at Zach Cummings. Reach out, ask questions. I try to answer everybody I can. And I've got a lot of people. It's a massive support system. My team at Factory X. Here at Gory MMA Fitness in Kansas City. Both of those. We've got our my management team with Iridium Sports Management, Joe Wooster, and everybody. I finally feel like I have the right team that's backing me and everything, and getting all kinds of sponsors that's behind me, and just helping everything with recovery and stuff. So I can't wait to show up in August and put on a show for you guys. So give me a follow and stuff and check out all the sponsors on there, and then let's get prepared for August and put on a show.
Most definitely. And everybody, don't forget, if you're in the Kansas City area, check out Glory MMA Northland. I believe it's the only gym in the country that has, now I forgot his name, man, the boxer. You guys have the look-alike there. What's his name?
Canelo. You're talking about Canelo look-alike.
Yeah, the Canelo look-alike. Go in and get his autograph. The guy really does look like Canelo. I had to ask Zach. I think it was jiu-jitsu. I said, "Is that Canelo?" And you're like, "No, bro, that's a lookalike." But the guy really looks like him.
He's close.
But go check out Glory MMA Northland. It's a tremendous facility. It's top notch. You get to train with Zach and many other tremendous aspects of the sport. Zach, I truly love you, my brother. I wish you the best in your upcoming fight. Stay safe in these dark times and keep shining a light, bro, because the sport and life needs a lot more like you. And give Mama a hug and the rest of the family. Tell them I love them and God bless you, bro.
Will do. Much respect.
All right. Peace out, bro. Bye.
Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the one and only Mr. Zach Cummings. I love interviewing him. Our interviews are kind of different than most of my interviews, but he's been a very pertinent part of my life and a young man that I respect so much. He's just a one-of-a-kind dude. You really need to go give him a follow on Zach Cummings MMA. Or Zach Cummings, he's just a tremendous, tremendous young man. And his mom is awesome. His pops, was a good friend of mine and my pizza buddy, pizza and fight buddy, actually. And just really good people. But check out Glory MMA Northland, Glory MMA in Lee's Summit. And I forget where the other location is in Kansas City, but they also have a Glory MMA affiliates in Branson and Mountain Grove. Check them out with Michael Morgan. On that note, I want to thank my sponsors, Finished MMA with Juan Martinez, Cutmat for Hire with Juan Ramirez, Jacob Stitch Duran, Bite Me Mouth Guards with Joe Rice, the 86ers with one and only Alfred and Freddie, and Blackout with Rodney Edgerson. On that note, thank you for tuning in. I appreciate the live listens. The show has been growing immensely, and it's amazing how many people listen to the show now since we've been put on an FM transmitter. If you're listening on iHeart, Univision, download it. The more airtime we get per download. So the more downloads we get, the more airtime we get next week. On that note, I'm going to take us out with some Soul Rebel Project. The song is kind of fitting. It's called Unity. The beginning is a little long, but listen to it, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it. We needed it. We truly need it in these dark times. Have a good night. God bless.
Here we go now, we're feeling love now. Solidarity, unity, love to all the people.
True
love. Spread
love
to all the people. Here we go now, feeling love now. Solidarity, unity, love to all the people. Spread love to all the people.
It's free speech.
Why do we put ourselves in boxes, categories, and divisions are toxic? Just one blood running through everyone's veins. Yeah, yeah. Say do not judge others if your hands are clean or dirty. People struggling through things unseen, yeah. I said all that they need is some upliftment and encouragement. That's what we came to do, yeah. Time to turn around your attitude and just realize how we get to. So many people are struggling, all they need is some love, yeah. Here we go now, feeling love now. Solidarity and unity, love to all the people. Spread love to all the people.